Welcome to the 100th Monkey Radio with Tom and Ramon. A few things I want to talk about before we get going tonight. I want everybody to know that our thoughts and prayers are going out to all those people out in the Midwest, the Mississippi Valley, with all the horrific storms and tornadoes and the major flooding that's going on there. Geez, guys, my heart goes out to you, and you're in my prayers. So I hope everybody else will add theirs to that also. Another thing, things are so moving so fast in the world right now. A lot of people waking up. What are people doing about it? Something that I'm doing personally, my nephew and I, we're gathering a lot of information, the scientific data, all the information we can find on fluoride. And we're taking it to our city council meeting here in a couple of weeks. And we're going to present the information to our city council and ask them, you know, we're just going to start there and see where it goes from there. What's going on here, guys? Do you guys even know what fluoride is actually doing to us? So question I got to ask all you people out there is, what are you doing to change? Are you doing anything to help fix the mess we are in? Where's your voice? We all got to start somewhere. So put yourself out there. Be the change. Okay, to the website. You guys all know that we just changed our name to the 100th Monkey. Still a lot of stuff on the website for you guys to check out. Our new paradigm page, the... Ramon and I are doing tarot and healing. We've got the forums. We've got the video links. We've got a lot of stuff going there, guys. Take a look. Coming up real soon in June, Ramon's going to be coming over to the U.S., and we're both going to be going over to the Awakening and Transformation Conference at the East Eddy Ranch on June 24th through the 27th. So I hope to see as many of you there as possible. It should be an excellent event. Let's see. What else we got, Ramon?
I want to welcome the 57th country, which is Iran.
Oh, yeah, nice.
Which I'm very happy to see. And one of the guests that we're going to – that's going to be up at the ranch we have today, Michael Tellinger has become one of South Africa's best-selling export authors. His regular articles on human origins and his book Slave Species of Gods have been praised by readers in over 20 countries. Michael, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Ramon. Thank you, Tom. Lovely to be chatting to you guys.
Yeah, it's just so fantastic to talk to you. Some fantastic work you've done there. This whole Southern Africa area seems to be just riddled with archaeological sites.
Yeah, it's a big surprise to everybody. It shouldn't be a surprise, but it has come as a bit of a surprise because very little real archaeological exploration with a scientific perspective has been done. And what so far everything has ever been found there has been ascribed to recent activity, and our history books are filled with misinformation and the wrong information about the fact that nothing of consequence or importance has ever come out of Southern Africa. And at the same time, they keep telling us that Southern Africa is the cradle of humankind. So make up your mind, you know, what
yeah.
is it?
Yes, absolutely. So I was looking at one of your videos on YouTube, and through one view through Adam's calendar there, several of them. You keep seeing in the background the two pyramids. Now those really sparked a curiosity in me. What are those two pyramids?
Well, they certainly have very distinct pyramid-like form. They're actually three of them. They're two larger ones and a third smaller one that are in line, and they align with the rise of Orion's belt from Adam's calendar. I must just also say that I'm very quickly beginning to call the calendar Enki's calendar because everything points to the fact that it's actually a construction that was done by Enki, the Sumerian deity, who was active in southern Africa and all the gold mines, obviously, and that's what this is all about.
Right.
So, so those pyramidal structures are very interesting. Is that, you know, it, sometimes it takes a miracle to see the wood for the trees. And this, it took us 7 years after Jan Heine first discovered the calendar or rediscovered the calendar, and did his amazing, work and measurements to determine that it was actually a calendar. And then nobody wanted to listen to him and believe him. They just kept telling him he's an idiot and he must leave him alone. And then he met me and then I got involved. And then, you know, this is where we are, two books later and a third book on its way and some amazing geological, archaeological and scientific exploration that has taken us to a whole nother level of understanding what has been going on there. But those pyramidal structures are fascinating. Look, they're totally covered by soil, pretty much like the Bosnian pyramid, but even more so, even more so. And it looks sometimes that there's actually a natural rocky outcrop that comes out there. So it's difficult to say whether they were pyramids that were used from natural bedrock or if under the soil there is actually a construction of more stylized stone like the pyramids in Giza or the other pyramids that people are more familiar with around the world.
Right, so nobody's really done any digging there at the pyramids?
No, it's all the stuff that we're talking about is virgin territory. The only kind of research we've done is some geological exploration, some measurements, electronic measurements, alignments, and GPR, ground penetrating radar, and also infrared photography. And from that, we've been able to put together enough information to allow us, from a scientific perspective, to make some very serious assumptions.
Here's a question. Has anybody tried to see if the Giza pyramid and the pyramid in South Africa line up, being that they both connect to the Orion Belt?
Oh, absolutely. That's one of the first things that I discovered when I got involved there. Adam's calendar and its pyramids, the pyramids down in the valley, Enki's calendar and Enki's pyramids down there line up with Great Zimbabwe, which is just further north of it in Zimbabwe, which I believe was Enki's headquarters in the ancient mining civilization down there, the Great Zimbabwe ruins, and the Great Pyramid of Giza all line up on the 31 degrees east longitudinal line.
Which also lines up with Stonehenge and a bunch of churches.
Yeah, there's a grid that you, quite a few people have done some interesting work on finding the different grids, the earth grids that link all these sacred and ancient sites together. And there are various ways of looking at it. The other way that I've been looking at it is with Willem de Swart's fabulous work that I've been working with for 4 years now. And the upcoming book that we're working on called Secret Numbers of God, and all these things tie up. I can tell you that from what we call the Secret Numbers of God is a whole new expose and a breakthrough that Willem de Swart has managed to somehow pull together. It's quite an amazing breakthrough in understanding how the nature of reality works. What is behind sacred geometry? What are the numeric structures that hold everything together in this projected reality of ours we call the universe?
Right.
And what I can tell you is that the numbers that link the Great Pyramid of Giza and Enki's calendar, or Adam's calendar in South Africa, is the number 26, 1 upon 26 and 26, which is a very interesting number. We can talk about that later if you want.
So.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so I'm sure that the majority of the people that listen to our show are familiar with the Sumerian legends or the Sumerian writings and the story of Enki and Enlil and the creation of humankind. But majority of the people that I've come across are all under the impression that this all happened in the Sumerian times and in those periods. The information that you're digging up contradicts that, or not necessarily contradicts that, but pushes that date back a long time.
Yeah, it certainly does that. I mean, during the Sumerian times, that was just recently. That was about 6,000 years ago. I mean, that's just the other day in terms of activity on planet Earth, you know. And once you start working with these timelines and realize that human origins and human presence goes back, you know, 300,000 years, and that's just the sudden appearance of the Homo sapien or our early ancestors, who we're not quite sure what they looked like, but they're the guys that carry our early genetic codes that we carry today. But this activity can very clearly be dated back with various scientific evaluations to way over 100,000, 200, close to 300,000 years ago. One of the sort of yardsticks that I use or whatever markers that I use is one interesting translation that I get from Zachariah Sitchin. Now, I know Sitchin has a lot of detractors, a lot of people that, you know, say he was a charlatan and all this. Well, I totally disagree. I take a completely the opposite perspective, and I respect the guy tremendously, a person who devoted his entire life to this particular study. And what is interesting, what's coming out of this, are some of the translations that he put in his books that he had no idea what they meant, and yet he puts these translations in. We are now finding the physical evidence of the things that he was talking about in many of his translations.
Right.
The vast settlements of the ancient gold miners, the timelines that go back to 285,000 years, the creation of the human race, Adam's calendar, and then the African oral traditions and the information that's been carried by the indigenous knowledge keepers in Africa, the shaman and the sangomas, especially like people like Credo Mutwa, who have been telling us this information for a long time, but no one has been prepared to sit and listen. And you start crossing over this information and you realize it fits like a glove. And now that I've been digging around there and exploring thousands of these ruins, and incidentally, there are more than 10 million of these ruins. Okay, if you want to go down that line, you're also welcome to do that. So just throw the people right into the deep end. There are more than 10 million of these ancient stone ruins that are directly linked to gold mining, hundreds of thousands of gold mines, if not millions of gold mines, that have been identified. And everything points to this place called the Abzu that the Sumerian tablets refer to, where the gold came from. So I find it fascinating that I wish Sitchin was alive, because his knowledge would have allowed us to recognize, or allowed him to recognize, many of the things that is going to take us a lot longer to recognize from the translations.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. So were you ever able to speak with him yourself?
No, unfortunately I wasn't. The only contact I had with Zachariah was last year on my tour of the USA. In New York, I invited him to come to my presentation so he could witness this for himself. He declined, saying he was still very weak. He just came out of hospital. And then 6 weeks later, he died.
Right.
It was a shame, yeah. Mm. Mm.
So one thing about the human genome that has always puzzled me is that we've got 23 pairs of genes, and every other species on the planet has 24. And that has always just baffled me. And it really throws a lot of weight to the genetic engineering theories.
Yeah, you're talking about chromosomes. Yeah,
Yes.
23 pairs of chromosomes, and the apes have 24 pairs of chromosomes. Initially, incidentally, and this becomes a very interesting part of the study on DNA, and I must just also tell you that, you know, every now and then I have people that work with DNA and they do gene mapping and so forth, and you know, and they think they understand what it is that they're doing, but you know, they are, with all due respect to these people, and some of them are smart and intelligent people, but they're like, you know, lab technicians or mechanics that are working on a highly advanced engine that are trying to detect what is wrong with the engine, but they don't really have an understanding of how the engine was put together and what its real function is. So it's quite interesting every now and then when I have a chat with these guys and they get quite defensive and they start to confront you, and they haven't really done their own homework to see what other information is out there about the DNA and what other geneticists that are real trailblazers and doing breakthrough experiments and research with DNA, not just mapping the genes, but actually doing some interesting research, breakthrough research, what they have to say about it. So what's important to understand is that we've got 22 pairs of chromosomes. The 23rd chromosome is the sex chromosome. Its entire function is purely just for procreation. Okay, so the chromosomes that carry the information for, that make up our body, the everything in our body, is in the 22 pairs of chromosomes. And that number 22 is very important because 22 right. becomes a number that you see echoing throughout
everywhere.
Mm-hmm. It's a number that's encoded into, you know, 22/7 being pi and the ratio that holds the entire universe together. just to finish on that note, there's a very interesting geneticist called William Brown who's published some papers that I've recently laid my hands on. He talks about 22 chakras of the DNA that are activated by 22 separate types of light frequency that activate the 22 chakras in our DNA, in the 22 chromosomes. Now, that's fascinating information coming from a geneticist working on research in DNA.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, that is.
Yes. Wait. So he believes that that each one of those are like a chakra?
Yeah, that's pretty much what he says. He also states in a roundabout way in his thesis. This is a paper that he wrote as his thesis. He also states in a roundabout way that chimpanzees evolved out of humans. Basically, the genetic information, the way that it sits in the DNA, suggests that our DNA is a lot more retarded than that DNA of the chimpanzees. So they actually are in genetic makeup than we are. So clearly that points a very direct finger at evidence that somebody's messed with our DNA. And there's so much more evidence that, you know, if you start looking at our anatomy and which parts of our body and brains we don't use and we should be using. Those are all little telltale signs how our DNA has been messed with over the thousands of years.
So, okay, I'm going to approach this with the let's accept the fact that, yes, we were genetically altered. We are a designed race. Something that puzzles me is the fact that, you know, we only use, 3% of our DNA, the rest of it's all junk DNA. Oh, it's more than 3%. What is it? We use 23% or 22% of our DNA, something like that, and the rest of it's all considered junk DNA. Is this a designed aspect?
I guess a lot of that would play a very important role. The small amounts of DNA that we use would be linked to the little bit of DNA that we use. With an argument that we've been manipulated, because if you look at other species, and I can't tell you about the chimpanzee because I haven't seen that information. And for some reason, there's a lot of contradicting information that I find whenever I go looking for it, is how much how many genes chimpanzees have compared to humans. There's a contradicting information that I find. So I've started being a bit careful about that. But it certainly seems that chimpanzees have more genes than humans, and yet they seem to be, you know, more primitive than we are. We have fewer genes than chimpanzees, active genes, and we're supposed to be the pinnacle of creation and intelligence, right? But like in the fruit fly and other species, I'm talking about lesser species now, that use, like a fruit fly uses 98% of its DNA, of its genes. It uses virtually its entire DNA strand. So it starts to beg the question, how does the total DNA strand, the molecule, you know, I find it incredibly difficult to believe that such an important molecule that is the blueprint of our physical and our intellectual and our spiritual makeup, because it's all of the above, it's not just one of them, how such a complex molecule could have so much wasted space in it. And I think many people share that same sentiment. And I think as people like William Brown and other geneticists do this research, we're finding out that the so-called 3% of the DNA we use is just, that's the manipulated part of our DNA, the genes that have been actively manipulated to create us in the way that we are today and keep us trapped in this form, while the rest of the DNA is actually the important part of the DNA, that the parts that should be giving us extrasensory perceptive abilities, should allow us to transmutate, should allow us to grow limbs back when we lose a limb or get severely damaged or burnt, should allow us to recover virtually instantly, and all these other things, should allow us to time travel and create Merkabas around us because DNA is activated by light, and all these things start to come out. And you realize how desperately important this molecule is. And we know very little about it, but I think a lot of psychics and intuitive people and people that do channeling of higher beings that are getting messages and information are getting a lot of this information out there, and it's helping a lot of the geneticists along.
Right. I absolutely love the fact that you have you've taken that step and opened your mind to that kind of information, the channeled and the psychics and that sort of thing. I just... Kudos to you. Congratulations. Thank you, sir, for crossing that line. There's so much in the scientific area that is absolute taboo that they would never even consider doing. And I believe that the psychic side of us is a very significant and needed part for us to be able to put everything together. We need to tie the spirituality with the science to be able to make it through this time of trauma that we are going through.
Yeah. So. And the other important thing, Tom and Ramon, is that people need to realize some very important facts about science. A lot of people are under the impression, especially people that have not studied any scientific field or anything like that, or people that don't have a higher education and so forth. And often people that have not gone to a university or got a higher education look up at people with higher education as somebody that's achieved this amazing thing. Well, let me tell you right now, those people have achieved nothing. They've achieved nothing great. I speak from experience. I spent 5 years at medical school, one of the best medical schools in the world. And I don't feel like I've achieved anything. When I left medical school, I felt that I had to go back and start re-educating myself, okay, because of the nonsense and the rubbish that they push, feed us with. So if you're out there and you look up at people with tertiary education, don't do that. Just stop immediately. Those are generally, and most often, those are the people that become the obstacles to progress because they embrace dogma. And they look after their own interests. Not everyone, but But so far, most of the people I've found that are obstacles to progress are people with egos the size of Mount, you know, whatever, and because they think they're special because they got a tertiary education. And I completely lost my train of thought what I was going to say.
I was gonna mention that this is what I find odd. For example, if I watch something like the Discovery Channel, and they're speaking about DNA, and the way they make sound our DNA is that we've dropped off certain DNAs, certain strands, because we don't need to use them. For example, the extra muscle that goes down your jawline that will allow you to eat that still a lot of apes still have. But then I would listen to certain guys. There's a Japanese monk named Khan that James mentions a lot. I don't know if he ever mentioned him to you. But anyway, he this gentleman has some amazing abilities where he bilocates and just travels through different dimensions and stuff like that. So the reason why I'm bringing him up and bringing up the opposite of what they're saying, is it maybe that the way our DNA was set up is more like you're unable to, you know, it's like having a closet and you're unable to get to the special equipment closets till you get old enough or mature enough, because you'll end up hurting yourself.
Well, it's, okay, Ramon, the one thing I have about that is that I don't think that we were designed that way. I think those things were shut off intentionally to make us more controllable.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That's kind of the feeling I get over it.
Absolutely. Yeah. There seems to be a natural order of things. The fact that there are 22 pairs of chromosomes, that's a important natural order of things. That they had to be 22 for them to be part of the sacred geometry of our bodies and various other aspects that one can go on forever. But, I think the DNA thing will slowly but surely start presenting itself more clearly and more clearly. What we do know is that the DNA has been activated by special frequencies of light, and those special frequencies of light seem to come to us from the cosmos, from the galactic center, and possibly some other sources. I believe that our sun itself is a conduit for some of those frequencies that come to us from the galactic center. And those frequencies activate and stimulate our DNA and re-energize our DNA, or activate parts of the dormant DNA. That has been shown through some very interesting scientific experiments. It's referred to as the phantom chromosome effect. If you remove the chromosomes from the nucleus of the cell, the cell continues to behave for an extra up to about 30 days after that, as if the chromosomes were still in the nucleus and it was getting information, because of the amount of light and the energy that it's absorbed and activated the surrounding organelles and parts of the cell. It's fascinating study, and I'd suggest people go look that up. And David Wolcock does quite a nice presentation on that as well. But just look up the phantom chromosome effect and read up on that, and you'll be amazed to see how much information is known about how light activates and stimulates our DNA.
Yeah, Dr. Bruce Lipton also does a lot of good work on that.
Exactly. I mean, Bruce Lipton is a phenomenal guy to get your head around and get into. Just remember where I was going with that whole tertiary education and science. And then it's very important to remember that people think that scientists have got it all figured out. Well, nothing can be further from the truth. Scientists have very little figured out, and people need to be very, very acutely aware of it. And don't just believe what you hear from any kind of academic or scientist, or because just because we observe something happening doesn't mean we understand why it is happening. And 90% or more, my guess is it's actually even much higher, 90% or more of experiments that are performed around and through experimental laboratories, scientific laboratories around the world on a daily basis, are not understood. We have no idea what is going on and how, why these things happen. We only understand and we can report on a very small fraction of the law, things that happen in nature and the laws of nature and in science and chemistry and so forth. So people need to be acutely aware of that. And only the brave scientists that are working at the really leading edge of science will tell you this information. It's the other pseudoscientists, the guys that have egos the size of mountains. Those are the guys that will keep telling you that, oh, we understand how everything works. They're all talking rubbish.
Yeah, I've also noticed that the majority of that sector of science is you have to look at where they're getting their funding from as far as their grants and such to do this research, because most of the cutting edge research that is actually doing stuff is not very well funded, because the system doesn't want this kind of information understood.
Well, you're talking to one such example that is not very well funded. All the work, all the research, and all the information, and the theories, and electric and scientific measurements, and whatever that I've done, has come out of my own pocket. I have not received any funding from anyone anywhere. Only from the talks that I do and the sales of my books. So, you know, hopefully sooner or later somebody will wake up and realize, hold on, this is a huge, new, important area that needs to be funded so we can speed up. I mean, I could keep several laboratories busy on a daily basis with all the research and scientific experiments we need to do to get some intelligent information and be able to speed up this process and the conclusions. But hopefully that time will come soon in the near future.
Yes. So go ahead.
You find with your with the psychic research you've done and the channeling research and also the field work and the oral stories of the indigenous people of the area of South Africa, you find that all of these are correlating to tell one story, or do you find that it's like different things that everybody's saying?
No, the overall direction and information that I've been able to extract from these various fields, as you see, from psychics, from channelings, from the shamans and some oral traditions and mythologies from Africa and Southern Africa, they all point in the same direction. They all have the same undertones, and they all talk about the gods came down from the sky and they created the humans to mine the gold, and they were created in Southern Africa, what the Sumerian tablets refer to as the Abzu, and we have two sites in Southern Africa, in South Africa and in Botswana, which is Adam's calendar or Enki's calendar, and Tsodila Hills in a very northern part of Botswana, which are both referred to as the creation caves of the human race. The Botswana cave is a serpent worship site, one of the most sacred sites on earth, and the other one is Adam's calendar or Enki's calendar, where the human race was actually where I believe, and what the African shaman believe, is where the insemination of the fertilized eggs happened into the Anunnaki females.
Interesting. So, have you had anybody do any remote viewing on the past of this site?
Yeah, I have. I've got some phenomenal documentation on the remote viewing of the ancient mines, the gold mines, and the slaves and the Anunnaki masters. Pages and pages of that information, which is absolutely, I tell you what, it sends chills up your spine when you read it, because now I walk among these ruins and I have transcripts of someone that didn't know anything about it when they were writing it, and they describe them in great detail, and various other interesting, you know, coincidences that are from a scientific perspective. I often use the scientific argument of in physics or mathematics called probability. And probability is a very acceptable argument in science and maths and physics. So the probability of certain things being able to happen are so unlikely that what we are encountering must be true, or what psychics have told us must be true, because any other probability is completely unthinkable. It's not possible. So these are the kind of things that we deal with, you know, and it's fascinating how it all starts to fall in place. One of the interesting things that I found is when I realized that the stone circles in Southern Africa were actually energy-generating devices, and that they used sound and sound frequencies as a source of energy that they were getting from the earth, from the earth's crust, and converting it into all kinds of types of frequencies and energies that they used for the mining operations, for the separating of the minerals, for levitation, for everything you can imagine, and much more. Once I realized this, I tried to figure out, well, how did they build the stone circles? And I came up with a philosophy and a theory how they built the stone circles, how they activated the cymatic frequencies of the earth, and that gave them the shape of the stone circles. This is why all of them are completely unique, because they represent the cymatic shapes, the sound frequencies that come out of the earth. The same bit of information, the story, exactly as I have been describing it, came from a gentleman in I think it was Los Angeles, San Diego, who was going through a past life regression. He doesn't know anything about me. He's never met me. He's never read any of my work or my theories. He's a retired electrical engineer from General Electric. And a lady was taking, who's a famous American a psychic who does past life regressions. She was taking him through his past lives, and she said, well, let me take him back to a time in South Africa and the gold mines and see if he can tell me anything interesting. And he told her verbatim what I told her a week before about how they created the shapes of these stone circles. So, you know, the probability of that kind of information coming out is mathematically is virtually impossible to call.
Wow. Wow. That's amazing. That is amazing. So,
I was going to say, when you have people go back and look at these, how do they describe the Anunnaki and the human beings? Because there's so many different races, and there's one school of thought that says that, you know, all these several different races created, different species created different races on Earth. So what is your take, or
they described as being tall, and also this is from the indigenous. The indigenous descriptions as well of the indigenous knowledge keepers is that they are tall, much taller than what we are, and they are pale-skinned. In fact, in African Zulu tradition, they are referred to as the Abelungu, the sky gods that came down. And Abelungu means the pale sky gods that came down from the sky and created the human beings to mine the gold. So that's how they've been described, probably about 9 feet, around 9 feet tall, around that area. And that's just the one description. But I think it's also important to put this into context. The Anunnaki were not the only beings on Earth. There were many other beings on Earth, as you say, that were messing with DNA splicing and genetics, just like the Anunnaki were. And that's where it gets really interesting. The Anunnaki were obsessed with the gold. They obviously, we now have the physical evidence of a vast gold mining operation that lasted for, you know, nearly 300,000 years, and it's still going on down in Southern Africa. That's where most of the gold in the world has come from. The platinum, the diamonds, the, you know, you name it.
Right, we were talking about the psychic abilities being turned on by DNA. Right when you started talking about the other races, as I was, before you said that, I had already popped my next question into my mind, which was, is there any indication of other races from other planets interacting with us in that time frame?
Yeah, I don't have an answer to that at this stage, but who knows? You know, maybe some interesting information will come out, and discoveries. But what the most important breakthrough that we have reached with this is that we now have the physical evidence that Zachariah Sitchin has been writing about, that everyone has been, you know, ridiculing him about and saying, well, you're just making this up. Where's the evidence? Where's the proof? Well, there can be no doubt that we have found the evidence of the Abzu, the gold mining operation in southern Africa, Enki's stronghold, not only that we also found the source of energy that they used, and that energy was the sound energies and the natural frequencies coming out of Mother Earth that they used with devastating effect. It is also now turning out that it was those devices that they could amplify these energy fields with tremendous amplification. I mean, the nuclear power that we've got today is nothing. It's a joke compared to the kind of energy that these guys could generate down there. And many psychics, or not many, let me put it, a few psychics have suggested that the energy devices that they used in South Africa to generate this huge amount of power, and I'm not talking about electricity, I'm talking other forms of energy, and this is where people often get it wrong. They think electricity is energy. That's not true. Electricity is just a deadly form of energy that was designed so that it can be metered and measured and controlled, so that we can't abuse, we don't have free energy for ourselves. So, and these energy things that they were creating down in South Africa were so powerful that they much later ended up to the sink, were the cause for the sinking of Atlantis and the breaking up of Atlantis. The same energy devices that they then abused in Atlantis, and it all went out of control. I know that Dramvelo Melchizedek speaks about that in his Flower of Life presentations.
Right.
And I think we have now discovered the tools that actually caused that destruction of Atlantis.
What's the fascination with gold? Because I don't think they came over here to mine it and then put it around their you know, around their neck the way we do.
That's the fascination that we have, and that becomes quite obvious, doesn't it? Because all native populations around the world tell you, indigenous populations always tell you, whenever they were discovered by the conquistadores or the disgusting Europeans that conquered the world in the last 500 years, and completely decimated the native populations wherever they came with their religion. One of the things that whenever they asked the native populations about the gold, you know, who does all this gold belong to? Because they were, you can imagine when they arrived in the Americas and in South Africa, long before they even got to the Americas, in South Africa, there was already gold trading of gold going on with the fabled African kings of Monomotapa that were the golden kings of the rich golden empire of Monomotapa in southern Africa. And that was going on in the 8th, 9th century already. And this is documented by the Arabic and Moorish record keepers from those times. So that's nothing new, but nobody really seems to know about it. So this is the information that I'm also bringing to the people of the world, just to make them realize how far back in recent times that goes. But then when they started arriving in the Americas and asking these native people, where does the gold come from and who does the gold belong to? You know, the answer was always, the gold belongs to the gods.
Right.
That's it. The gold belongs to the gods. So the immediate deduction that you can make from that is that if the humans were not allowed to possess the gold because it wasn't theirs, when eventually they were given permission or stole some of it, or somehow ended up owning some of the gold, it became a highly valued item and prized possession. So that's where the value and the ornamental aspect of gold as jewelry began to develop its role in human history as jewelry and something you start hanging around your neck because it is deemed to be very valuable because it belongs to the gods. And you have no idea what the gods used it for and why they wanted it. But, you know, now that you had a piece of it, you're going to show everybody because you had something that belonged to the gods and you weren't really supposed to have it.
Yeah. So has any psychic or remote viewer told you what they used it for, the gold?
That's a huge question, and it comes up every single time that I do a presentation, as you can imagine.
And that
in itself becomes a presentation on its own, because then you start getting into the properties of gold. What is gold to planet Earth? How is gold linked to Earth and the energy fields in our planet? And you start realizing that it seems to be one of the energetic chakras, if not the energetic driving force of this planet. And when you start analyzing the numeric science, as I mentioned earlier, the secret numbers of God that we're working with, you realize that the atomic number of gold is directly linked to the proportions of planet Earth. And things like that, and you start going, okay, this is a much bigger story than people realize. Then obviously you start getting into the monoatomic properties and the orms of gold and platinum and the other platinum group metals, and how that is ingested as a form of energy, and how it can be used as a form of energy for levitation, for crossing the universe, for all kinds of things, for enhancing your ability to think higher thoughts and turning you into a being of light, I suppose, in some ways as well, enhancing your ascension to higher energies and higher vibrational frequencies. So it's very interesting, and the whole manna from heaven, right? And Moses and the manna from heaven in the desert and the Israelites, and where did he get the manna from heaven? It seems that, you know, the Ark of the Covenant was full of it. And therefore it was causing a levitation effect to the Ark of the Covenant, because the Ark of the Covenant never touched the ground. It always hovered and levitated above the ground. And that's why they could open the waters of the Red Sea, because of its immense power. And then much later, when Moses was dead, his successor, Joshua, did the same when they were crossing the River Jordan. They put the ark into the river, and the ark opened up a path and stopped the waters of the River Jordan so they could cross. But you start working with all these bits of information, pulling it together, and you realize that it's a complex subject, the thing of gold. And it's not just something you can throw out there, and you've got to keep your mind open to possibilities that we may not have yet embraced.
Right.
Yeah. I got a funny story about gold. A guy I used to work with, when I lived in New York, we were both waiters, and he was telling me that he had brought some monatomic gold, and he put some under his tongue, and he was meditating, and he felt himself starting to levitate, and when he started to get excited about it, that's when he fell back down. And of course, I wasn't there, so I'm not a witness to it, but
it's interesting. I've heard similar reports from other people. Now, I'm not sure whether that is now those kind of reports are becoming sort of urban legend, so, you know, people start repeating the same kind of stories or not. But I wouldn't be surprised if it has that kind of effect at all. Remember when Moses came down from the mountain, he burnt the golden calf, and he didn't turn it into molten gold. He turned it into white powder. And
right.
Since when does gold turn into white powder when you melt it? You know, so
yeah.
Moses had knowledge of alchemy, and people that have studied the character of Moses, whoever he was a very highly educated and trained priest in the Egyptian mystery schools, and he would have known all the alchemical processes. He would have understood all that stuff intimately, and he turned the gold into white powder of gold or manna, and then used it to cure the Israelites and make them go, because they were starting to go a bit loopy by the sound of it. Whoever these Israelites were, that's a whole other debate altogether, because my other research tells me that the whole story of the Exodus is actually, there's a lot of inconsistencies there, and that it's possible that it never happened.
Right. Now, there's a book out by Edgar Cayce on the Revelations that talks about the 12 tribes of Israel and what the true meaning of the 12 tribes are. It's pretty amazing stuff. It has nothing to do with people. It has to do with certain aspects of the physiology of the human being. Pretty amazing stuff.
Yeah. And, also the other thing is that, everyone's going on about Israel, and I've just been driving through the United States, all the way from New York to Tampa. I've been listening to all the radio stations, and, we come across all the fundamentalist Christian stations, and I find it fascinating. I love listening to those stations to hear what the guys are saying and preaching, brimstone and doom and destruction and death and by fire, and how God is going to judge you and punish you, and you've got a choice between burning like a pile of wood, or you have a choice of getting all the golden riches in heaven. And you go, what are these guys on about gold riches of heaven?
I don't know.
Physical gold. This is fantastic, and that's what they today preaching this kind of stuff to people.
My grandmother used to tell me that.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's all. We don't have to worry about it in 5 days. On the 21st is the rapture.
That's right. You better hold on tight, brother.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, the famous. My grandmother used to tell me that when we die, that heaven was paved in gold, and now as an adult, I'm starting to wonder if that comes from these aliens that were taking all this gold, and they would tell the humans that the heaven or their home planet was paved in gold.
Yeah, yeah. We're taking this and building a city in heaven for you with gold. Oh.
Yeah. I think the Stairway to Heaven has something like that, isn't it? And she's buying a Stairway to Heaven where everything glitters in gold.
Yep.
Led Zeppelin, bless them. The important thing, guys, is that we constantly keep our minds open and just be open to new information, because it's coming so quickly now, and the shift is upon us. The Mayas had a lot of knowledge and information. So did all the other ancient civilizations, the Hindus, the Vedas, the Dravidians.
Yeah, it is definitely happening. Shift happens. So you're in the middle of your tour right now, and you said you're in Tampa. Why don't you give us a rundown on where you're going to be here in the next few weeks?
Yeah, the night after tomorrow. What's today? Today is the 16th, right?
Yep.
So I'm in Tampa on the 18th. Not tomorrow night, the day after. 18th of May, and then we move on to Austin, to Dallas, to Santa Fe, to Phoenix, San Diego, Los Angeles, Santa Barbara, San Francisco, Sacramento, and also doing Vancouver, Portland, Seattle, right across the USA. Then we go to Minneapolis and make our way back to Vermont and New York. We're also doing Toledo and Ohio, Chicago, and then we end up in Vermont, in Burlington, Vermont, I think on the 16th or 17th of July. So we're just at the beginning of our tour, and so go onto my website, ZuluPlanet.com. You can click on the banner there, and it'll tell you exactly where I'll be, and please come and see and listen. There's a phenomenal amount of information. The presentation is about 2.5 to 3 hours long, And it'll certainly give you a lot of food for thought and present you with some fascinating scientific and physical evidence of this vanished civilization in southern Africa.
Right.
Wow, that's quite amazing.
Yeah, it looks like you're going to be busy for the next couple of months.
Yeah, but it's important. If you don't go there and do this, I feel that I was given this information, and I need to do something with it. And the more I do with it, the more I share it with people, the more information I seem to be given, and the more things get revealed to me. So it's a give and take, and I firmly believe in that. And so I'm here, and it's my second tour to the USA. Last year was my first one, and more and more people are coming to listen and sharing this information with others. It's fantastic. And, thanks very much to those that have come and met with me and also share their knowledge and information with me. I learn at every stop, wherever we go, I learn from people that come and share their own information with me.
Yep, that's how we do it.
Any chance you'll be coming to Asia?
I have to come to Asia. I've got to do a few things. Hopefully this year still, I've got to do UK. I've got to do Europe. A lot of interest all over Europe, from Scandinavia down across to Italy, and then Australia and New Zealand. And then after that, I'll look at coming to Asia, because Asia is just an unknown quantity to me. I have no idea where to even begin. The other places, it's easier because I've got people on my database that email me and so forth. So those are the people that normally get involved and initiate the process, find a venue, help me either find accommodation or spread the word. So when I get there, I've got a decent audience to talk to. But in Asia, I just have this, just like this huge continent. I've got no idea where to start.
Well, we're starting to see, even on our show, we're starting to see quite a few more listeners from Asia, from Japan and Korea and Taiwan I'm actually kind of surprised that we're picking up listeners from there, but
I'm surprised we're picking up listeners from the Middle East, actually.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, listen, the consciousness is rising.
Absolutely.
Nobody is immune to it. Not even the Illuminati and the control groups that think they can run this planet and think they can keep making it their playground and oppress people and oppress the knowledge and information. They are not immune to the rise of consciousness. It will get to them as well.
Yep, that's a good thing. So want to thank everybody for joining us tonight, and thank you, Michael, so much. And we hope to be Ramon and I will actually meet you at the conference at eSETI, and
yeah.
Maybe we'll set something up and do another interview here for the radio show one of these nights.
Yeah,
so
let's plan that. That'll be a good time. See you face to face. We can have a nice long chat and make that another show for you guys. Yeah,
sounds fantastic. Okay, guys, thanks for listening. Condemnation without investigation is the height of ignorance. And we will see everybody next week.
Night, night.